Federal funding for scientific research in everything from energy to biomedical science has flatlined in recent years. Some scientists worry that means the U.S. will fall behind other countries in scientific and technological advancements. But it also means an increasing share of the nation's research is done by industry. Around two-thirds of the scientific research and development in the U.S. is privately funded, according to the National Science Foundation. But having manufacturers of things like drugs or pesticides evaluate the safety of their own products raises some thorny ethical dilemmas. Joining us to talk about those dilemmas and some possible solutions is Kevin Elliott. Kevin's an associate professor at Michigan State's Lyman Briggs College with a joint appointment in the Philosophy and Fisheries and Wildlife Departments. Kevin, welcome to Current State.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
Got
to
be the first joint appointment to Philosophy and Fisheries and Wildlife in the history of academia. How did that unfold exactly?
Yeah, well, actually, we have an undergraduate program here in STEP, Science, Technology, Environment, and Public Policy. And as part of that, it's a collaboration between Lyman Briggs and James Madison College and the Department of Fisheries and Wildlife.
How interesting.
And so they actually created a line between Briggs and Fisheries and Wildlife for a philosopher.
How about that? What are the problems with industry-funded research?
Yeah, well, so I first want to, emphasize that industry funds a lot of great research. We're all excited about our smartphones and our computers and our new energy-efficient technologies, but there's also kind of a string of cases we can look at where there seem to have been some worrisome problems. Tobacco is perhaps one of the most famous examples throughout the 20th century of industry trying to hide information about potentially worrisome effects of its products. But if one looks at the lead industry, asbestos, vinyl chloride, some environmental cases like the ozone hole and acid rain, there are a number of cases where it appears that industry withheld worrisome information about its products and maybe actually produced science designed to confuse the public and deflect attention away from these problems.
Well, as we sit here in 2014, do you have a handle on how much of this research we should be concerned about? How big a problem is this?
Yeah, it actually is really tricky. It's easy to find a variety of worrisome cases. One area where there's been some really interesting empirical work is in the pharmaceutical industry and biomedical research. And there's actually been some efforts to systematically look at the results of research funded by the pharmaceutical industry and then independently funded studies on the same topics. And they found some pretty amazing correlations where it looks like across several different studies, the industry-funded work was about four times more likely to generate results favorable to its products than the independently funded studies. And it's important to note that this is a correlation. There can be a lot of causal factors for this, but it does raise a number of concerns.
Who is in charge of evaluating the research put out by private industry?
Yeah, this is actually a really good question. So we depend on our regulatory agencies, the FDA in the case of biomedical research or the EPA in the case of environmental research. And of course, they do the best they can. They try to do a good job. But there's a limit to how much time, how much money they have. And also, there can be concerns sometimes about regulatory capture, where there can be connections between the industry and the regulators. Or, we hear in a lot of areas about revolving doors, officials within agencies going to work for industry and so on. Yeah, so that can be a concern. And actually, one of the solutions that I think may be important to consider is to make the data submitted to these regulatory agencies publicly available, because there's a limit to how much the agencies can do, how much they can find. And there have been some really great cases, for example, again, back to the biomedical literature, where, say, data was made publicly available through litigation and so on, where then independent academic scientists were able to go through the data and find really important concerns. And there's been a trend toward making publicly funded research, making that data publicly available. And I think probably for materials that are being regulated, maybe we ought to try to make all the data submitted for regulatory purposes available.
How big a hurdle is that, though?
Yeah, that's a good question. And that may be a better question for a legal scholar than a philosopher. I think one of the challenges in these areas is that some of these solutions are really politically difficult to implement, and there may be need to be legislation change that can be really difficult to accomplish. I mean, one solution that I've been interested in that might not be quite such a hurdle to achieve is to pursue collaborative research projects, where there have been some interesting cases where, say, industry worked with a non-governmental organization or a citizens group to do research together, where they worked together on deciding what some of the key questions were and then interpreting the work. And this is something Michigan State actually has a new internal grants program called Science Studies at State, meant to link together folks like me doing philosophy or history or sociology of science and scientists to explore work on projects together. And this is something I'm actually hoping to get some money for, to sit down with some scientists on campus and look at the cases where these collaborative research projects might work well or not work so well.
Well, we'll just wait for your appointment to the MSU College of Law, and then you can come back and you can explain how all of that works. Why, Kevin Elliott is our guest here. Kevin's an associate professor at Lyman Briggs College at Michigan State University, and we're talking about the nation's research and the growing share of our scientific research that is done by industry itself. Kevin, why would industry want to be more involved?
Yeah, well, so that's a great question. And one of the things we'd like to look at as we explore this is there may be some cases where it may not be that appealing for industry to do a sort of collaborative project with, say, folks who may not be working with them. But there can be cases. I actually talked with a professor back when I was at the University of South Carolina before I came here, who was doing a lot of research within industry. And he said it was somewhat discouraging that they would fund a big research project that they felt was good quality science, and then there was very little public uptake for it. And so in some cases, it might just be worth emphasizing this research and slowing regulations and so on. But if industry does want to gain public support, they might feel like it's in their interest to develop research projects where there might be more trust. And maybe one way would be to reach out to different stakeholders to work together on projects.
How confident are you in the future, Kevin, that we as a society might be willing to invest more money in government-funded research? Or are we looking at kind of this scenario that we're talking about indefinitely?
Yeah. Well, one of the reasons why I'm interested in these collaborative approaches is because certainly it looks politically right now like it's hard to generate more funding for the National Science Foundation or the National Institutes of Health. I think that would be another fantastic approach. I think that the cases that I'm looking at illustrate the value of publicly funded research in some of these areas where there's so much money at stake and where there really is something valuable about our universities being able to have academics who are receiving public funding where there's not so much pressure for them to be steering their results in one direction or another.
How much access does the public have right now to this kind of information?
Yeah, well, there's actually, if I can plug colleagues at Briggs and so on, something that a number of historians of science have been doing a really good job of is trying to uncover this sort of these kinds of phenomena. Our associate dean Mark Largent, who's also appointed in James Madison College, I was just reading the galley proofs of a new book he has looking at Reye syndrome and possible connections with aspirin and some of the goings-on behind the scenes there. There's, again, a lot of the information we have about, say, activities by industry related to climate change comes from some great historians of science, Naomi Oreskes and Eric Conway, and a book they wrote called Merchants of Doubt. So, again, I think this is where scholars doing science studies can potentially help us, as well as folks doing this kind of empirical research I mentioned in the biomedical field, looking for correlations and so on.
You will be talking about this very topic here coming up very, very soon. Tell our listeners about that.
Yeah. So tomorrow evening I'll be giving a talk at 7:30 in Lyman Briggs College in Holmes Hall, room C106. The title of the talk is Engines of Knowledge or Merchants of Doubt, Can We Trust Industry-Funded Research?
That's gets right to the heart of the matter here. Our guest has been Kevin Elliott, an associate professor at Michigan State's Lyman Briggs College. We're talking about the growing share of the nation's research being done by industry and the ramifications of that. Kevin, thanks very much.
Thank you.